Well, good afternoon once again. It's good to be here. And if you think about missions and mission work, so this afternoon I'm going to do something a little different. I'm going to share some of the experiences that we had in Haiti, some things we learned. And as we think about some of these things, I want you to think about the faithfulness of God and God being exalted. It's not about us, what we did, but it's about God. I'm hoping I can turn your attention towards God as you think about him. So early 2000s, me and my wife were, at that point in time, we were actually helping another church. Our home church had actually sent us out to help another smaller church. So we were going there a couple Sundays a month. We're trying to figure out, where does God want us, right? And where's God calling us to be? And so we were in part of this small church, and we felt good there. So maybe God's calling us to simply plug ourselves in there and be part of this small church in whatever way we can. Then in 2005, I don't know exactly when it was, our home church came to us and wanted to know if we would consider going into mission work. And at that point, there wasn't any commitment to go anywhere, just would you consider it? And if you consider, would you be willing to make a commitment to go when the need comes up? How do you make a commitment like that, knowing you're committed to go somewhere but not sure where? And so they had asked, our home church had actually asked, I think about 6 or 7 couples throughout the church, hey, would you be willing to go in mission work if the need comes up? And out of 7, I think 4 of us said, we're willing to go, not knowing where we're going to go. And so we had committed to that. And part of that was, is kind of preparing us to go for when the need comes up. And it wasn't too long after that, as we committed to that, and that there's a need came up in Haiti, and we were asked if we consider going to Haiti to serve under SLM for 2 years. And as we prayed about that, we felt God was calling us to go there. And, you know, Haiti's probably not one of the first places you would go. If you're willing to go somewhere, Haiti's probably not that real high on the list. You know, there's a lot of other places you can go that I could think of as just better places to go. But God called us there, and we wanted to be faithful to where God called us to. And, you know, as I think about our time in Haiti, we as a family don't view our time in Haiti with regret. It's a time of growing in our lives, a time of learning, a time of us being part of serving God where he wanted us to be. So in spring of May of 2020, or May of 2006, we packed up everything we had and we left. At that point, we had 4 boys. Our oldest son would have been 6 years old. We had a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old. Packed everything up and we moved to Haiti. And, you know, this morning I talked about radical obedience. There are several people started to question our sanity, in a sense, I guess. You know, why would he even do that? Why would he leave, you know, a job behind? Why would he leave this behind? Why would he do all these things? I had an aunt and uncle that, you know, they questioned, what are you thinking here? And, you know, that radical obedience to serving Christ where God wanted you to be, that's where we wanted to be, being surrendered and being committed to God. And just knowing that you're doing what God wants you to do can bring a peace. Even if you may not see the full picture of what God's calling you to, just that peace and that surrender to him and his will was a time for you, what was good for us. So as we moved to Haiti, you know, we learned a lot about Haiti early on. You know, as we think about developing friendships, developing, you know, learning the culture, you know, all them things was definitely a learning curve for us, but it was good as we were served there. A little bit of the work that we were involved in. So part of the work was I was called to be pastor of the church down there, and Wawa alluded to that. Wawa would have been part of the church at that point. I'm not sure exactly how many members we would have had, but there again, the time of learning, of working together and different things like that. You know, and I think that's probably some of the work I enjoyed the most, of just going out and meeting people and, you know, presenting the gospel of Jesus Christ. You know, our home church was back here in the United States, but developing friendship with the local people and depending on them for help and guidance, I think was well. And I think it was good. Like I said, I did some preaching, some different teaching at the local church there in Santo, became pastor of that church. You know, and I look back at them times, and I'm sure Walwal can allude to this, of, you know, I thank the Haitian people for their graciousness and their understanding. You know, there's so many misunderstandings can happen quickly in our churches back here, and even much quicker cross-culture. And I'm gracious for men and people that were gracious to me for that through that time. Another thing I did there was, I was part of we had a school there, which we had about 500 students, give or take, grades 1 through 6. And something I did there, which I really enjoyed, is having devotions 3 days a week out at the school. And, you know, you get 500 students in a building and start singing, you can make a lot of noise. And it was interesting, but I enjoyed getting to know these local children and getting to relate to them and building friendships and different things like that. And it's amazing, even when I go back after how many years, you know, these children were this big when we went, and now they're this tall, and they remember who I was. And I don't say that to bring glory to myself, but it's just them friendships that were established. And, you know, you say, did you make a difference in the life of anyone? And you do. Maybe it's not a large, something big, but making that difference that they remember your name meant a lot to me, knowing that you made a difference in their life. And so I did that. I was responsible making sure they had school food, making sure they had school supplies that they needed, and all them different things, whatever, you know, what makes a school operate, relating to the teachers, staff, different things like that. You know, and as I think about mission work, you know, mission work starts in the life of young people. You know, making a difference in the life of a child somewhere, making a difference in the life of a young person that you can teach and you can raise up and you can present the gospel to them. You know, many times you go to a foreign country, it's hard to reach the adult people. But you can reach the adult people through the hearts of the young people. And reaching the young people and raising them up has been a blessing. And it's amazing to me as I think about these different students and going back and seeing some of them that are now they're now in church leadership. You know, that's a blessing. It made a difference. One person planting a seed, one person watering, and allowing God to work in their hearts, letting God do the difference. You know, sometimes when you think about mission work, and I think Brother Kevin alluded to this in his devotions, you know, sometimes you get this idea that you go out and you wake up in the morning and all day long you're preaching, you're teaching, you're evangelizing, and in all reality, that's not real true. You know, as you think about living life in a foreign field, you still got to live life. The same thing I tell people, the same things you did back here, you got to do in another country. You still got to eat. You still got to cook. You still have to do all them, the necessities of life. And I say that because, there again, as I meet with young people, sometimes they get the idea that the foreign field, you know, you go there and somehow all these things just happen. And all you are is evangelizing. And it's you're not. You still got to live life. And I think sometimes, as you know, as we think about that, the best example we can do, the best example we can be, is to live life showing Jesus Christ in everyday life. You know, people coming to the gate, knocking, wanting this, people needing help, you know, people, you know, visiting sick people, encouraging people that are struggling, all them things, you need to do that. And we're called to do that. And that was part of our work, just daily interaction with the neighbors and friends that were around us, showing them Christ's love. And there's times where that can get old, where they're always knocking on the gate, needing this, needing that. But am I willing to show the love of Christ to them? Am I willing to show them what it is to serve Christ? We did spend several years at the guest house in Haiti. And there again, it's something that I think the longer we lived in Haiti, the more we enjoyed the guest house work, interacting with other people. You know, groups would come through, we would feed them for the night, we would do different things, and it ended up being, so when you first go to a foreign country, you're the new person. Well, the longer you stay, the less people have stayed longer than you. And for us, as we stayed there 3 years, 4 years, time kept going on, and we ended up being a mentor to the new people coming in. Never was our intent, but that's what ended up happening. These young families would come through the guest house that moved to Haiti, and everything was wrong, and this and that, and just sitting with them, and let's think about it. God called you here. God called you here. God is with you. And just walking through that whole process. So we did a lot of that probably in the last year that we would have lived in Haiti, and I enjoyed that, just working with people and getting to know people. We ended up mentoring probably more American people in the last year than Haitian people that we lived there. And it's been good. And some of them friendships we have forged over the years are still alive and active as we meet them, different people, and we talk about them things, different things that we talked about in Haiti. So it was good. I want to think a little bit about some of the different things that we experienced in Haiti. And as I think about some of these things, they're not always easy to talk about. Not always easy. Something I probably don't talk about real often because of the impact it had on our lives. You know, so we first moved to Haiti in 2006. Things were relatively peaceful until about a week or two after we moved there. And then there started being some fighting, and there's probably about 6 weeks within the first 3 months that we lived there that my wife didn't leave the compound because of fighting and kidnapping and all these things. And you start to wonder, what's your purpose here? You know, you can't hardly interact with the people. You can't get, why don't you just go back home to where it's comfortable, where you can live? And you wonder, why did God... You know, there's times we wonder, why did God call us here? But I believe it's a time of God saying, this is where I want you. I called you here. I am with you. Can you trust me? Even though we didn't know everything at that time, it was simply a time of us trusting in God and allowing God to work in our hearts as we went through that time. You know, there's different hurricanes that went through when we lived there. I remember one year we had two hurricanes that went through almost back to back. You know, one quit raining and had a little bit of sun and another couple of days of rain. And some of the different things that took place, you know, some of the rivers that washed out bridges and the damage and all them things. And how do you see the good in that? How do you help people see that God is still good despite all the destruction? It can be difficult. And it can challenge our faith in God. But God does care. And God continues to care for his people. Another time we remember, I'm sure Wall remembers this, January 12th, 2010, is when an earthquake went through Haiti. And, you know, as I was preparing for this, reminiscing some of them things, thinking about some of them things, some of them feelings came back of everything that transpired during that time. So as we were there January 12th, we had some visitors there. Some of the board was down visiting, and we had decided that evening that we were going to go out for supper at a restaurant. And there's a couple different restaurants we went to, and as we were driving uptown, we were trying to decide which one do we go to. We had kind of listed them off, and we weren't sure. And we had kind of settled on Hotel Montana at the time. And as we got closer to Hotel Montana, We said, you know, why don't we just go to Hotel Hotel Kenom, I think it was. It was a little closer, and at the last minute we changed our mind, not knowing what God had in store. It was kind of a off-the-cuff decision. We went there, and as we were sitting there at that restaurant, we had ordered our food, we were just chit-chatting, and if you know where the restaurant sits, there's the road comes right down beside it, down across the mountainside. And I remember sitting there, and we heard this loud rumble, and it sounded like a dump truck that had lost its brakes coming down the mountain. And, you know, we're thinking, okay, when's this thing going to crash? It's going to hit something. And the crash never came. Instead, everything started shaking. And I remember sitting there. We were sitting on a patio there, and there's a swimming pool down over. The mountainside was up here. I remember looking down at the swimming pool and seeing four-foot waves coming out of a swimming pool, and I knew something wasn't right. And then I looked at the mountainside, and I remember the mountainside. The mountainside looked like a large flag that was actually waving like this. And that's when we realized there's something much more than a dump truck that's going to hit the building. And as we tried to get out and the ground was shaking, everything was moving, not knowing what was going on, we did get outside the building, and the building stayed standing. You know, unbeknownst to us, the Hotel Kenom was actually a wooden structure, and that wooden structure flexed with the earthquake. It groaned and flexed, but it actually stayed standing. Later we found out the Hotel Montana was a concrete building, and had we went there, I wouldn't be here today. That building collapsed, and the area that the restaurant was in collapsed. And you know, you say, well, was it an off-the-cuff decision, or was it God's protecting hand? You know, looking back, we can see God changed our mind. And we didn't know why at the time, but we realized later that God was in it. God had a reason for it. So where the restaurant was to our house was generally a 45-minute drive. And that night it took us about 2 hours to do the same drive. And I remember we didn't know what for destruction had all taken place. The area we were in, there wasn't a whole lot. But driving down the road trying to get home, we started seeing more and more. And I decided instead of taking some back road, we got to take the main road. So I took the main road right down through Center City, Patientville. And it's mostly a four-lane road. And what I remember most is that road was full of people. And the only way to drive was to lay on your horn and allow the people to actually make a path for you to drive in, and they come right around the truck again. Not too many people were on the streets. And we started getting reports of the damage and people that were killed. You know, cell phone service was pretty spotty at that point because a lot of the towers went down. There's a lot of destruction everywhere. People in the streets, the afterquakes of the earth still moving. You know, and then again, not knowing when we get back to our mission house, are we even going to have a house to sleep in that night? What's left of it? And we did get back, finally got back, and our houses were all standing. There were some damage to them, but they were all standing. We praise God for that. And obviously something that big doesn't happen without hitting the news. So, of course, our families up here seen the news and tried to call. Well, cell phone service was very spotty, so they couldn't get through and started raising anxiety on this side of things of, well, were they killed? You know, especially the news started showing the areas where the damage was, and they knew about where we were and didn't know we were gone. And so, of course, there are some anxious moments on this side of not knowing what happened to us. And thankfully, we were able to get enough of internet service. We sent an email out saying, we're fine, don't worry about us. And that's all they needed until we could get better service and get a hold of them and explain how things were. Well, we can look at all that. You know, you look at, you know, different people that lost their lives in that, and we wonder, why did God spare us? What did God have in mind for us? What made us any more special than anyone else? what God had a plan for us. Soon after that time, we did do quite a bit of water distribution. So you don't think about water as, you know, we take water for granted here. You know, you get to the faucet, you open up, you have water. Well, in Haiti, to understand Haiti, there's a lot of places in Port-au-Prince where the water truck would come through once a day. You get your buckets and you get your whatever you want and you get your water. So if that water supply is cut off, it doesn't take long for life to start deteriorating. And so we went to some of these different areas, worked a little bit with CAM, had some different medical clinics where WAWA was involved in. We went to these areas and handed out water, talked to people, you know, and the destruction of some of these areas. I remember talking to a 14-year-old boy, and he said, "All my family's gone." He said, "I wasn't home when the earthquake went through, or I wouldn't be here either." What do you tell a young boy like that? You know, God is still love. God still knows everything. But how do you comprehend that when everything is gone? Everything you knew, your mom, your siblings, your grandparents, they're gone. They're under there somewhere, underneath the rubbish. So different people like that, was such a challenge of how do you relate to people? And then it didn't take long before you could start smelling the decaying bodies. You know, and that's a smell that if you ever experience it, you'll probably never forget. How do you offer people hope in a time of destruction like that? And you wonder why God allows these things to happen. But as I thought about that, So the earthquake was, and then we started doing some rebuilding projects. And through that rebuilding project, we had partnered up with several different churches, and quite a few of them were out of Mexico. And these were churches that generally didn't do a lot of mission work. They were pretty secluded. And through that time, they started sending funds, they started sending groups. And I believe it was a time of growth in the church for them. You know, being able to send their young people out and experience another culture, another country, and be able to get out and help other people. It was time for them to grow. And as I related to that, there again, them different young people and the challenges they were going through and trying to decide, is serving God worth it? And as some of them, as they were in Haiti, as they made commitments to want to serve God and want to commit their lives to Him, it was a blessing as I seen that. And also to see, you know, to see the Haitian people come together and help each other. You know, that was a blessing to me. As they came together and they were willing to help each other, pitch in. That's a blessing that you can't imagine. And I think it was good for our church, our Santo, you know, as they helped and pitched and did different things. You know, it was also encouraging to see, you know, our Haitian men working alongside the different work crews that came. You know, Haitian men, American men working together, hand in hand, something in common, Jesus Christ. And it was a blessing to see that, all working together for the common goal of showing God's love. So as we see, through that we've seen God's protecting hand. It's just encouraging to us to see God's faithfulness and who God was, knowing that God was with us and we could trust Him no matter what happened. And I think God, as I think about all these different things, God was simply preparing us for more things that He had in mind. So April of 2010, it's probably a day in our lives that we will never forget. Sunday morning, we had left to go to church. And we left the church like any other Sunday morning, got to church. And to understand how our church was set up, if you were never there, so we had a church building here and we had a school building here, all in the same compound, all in the same yard. We had one main gate you had to go in. Pulled in there, our boys got out of the truck. You know, we were going to church at that time. Our oldest son would have been 11 years old, almost 12. And there's a vehicle pulled into the church that I didn't recognize. It wasn't not necessarily uncommon because different people come and go. And so this vehicle pulled in and they just sat there. So I went and talked to them. I said, hey, we're having church here. You know, you're welcome to come to church, but you really can't sit in your car all Sunday morning. We want you to come in. So they did. Two of the men got out, and they came and they sat in the church, and they sat right at the back. Right at the back door, right at the center aisle. There again, didn't really think a whole lot of it. You know, it's kind of a little uneasy. Okay, who are these men? Because no one from church recognized them at all. And you're not sure. So I was trying to keep an eye on them, but yet not be too worried about these men. So we usually gathered for church. We'd sing a song, have a prayer, and then the children were dismissed out of the church and out the back of the church over to the school. So when this happened, so we had a song, dismissed the children out of school, and our oldest son, as he was walking back through, he stepped outside the church. These two men on the back bench grabbed him, threw him in their vehicle, and started going out the driveway. And I was at the back of the church when all this was happening. And your mind stops for about a split second till you realize what just happened. And that's what happened. I realized these men are actually kidnapping him. These men have no intention of letting him here at church. And so I ran out to the gate at the road there. We had a school guard there that kind of opened and closed the gate. People were coming. We ran out there thinking we can close the gate before the vehicle could get out. Well, they got out there, and they met us there. And the one guy jumped out of the vehicle, threw me to the ground, shot one time in the air, threw the guard to the ground, and then they left. And as a father, seeing your oldest son go out of the driveway in a strange vehicle with men you didn't know is a terror that I hope never anyone has to go through. It's something you can't imagine. And the first thoughts were, would I ever see my son alive again? We lived in Haiti long enough at that point to know what had happened, and we know what happened when people were kidnapped. And it's usually not the result that you would hope for, you would want. And Wawa was there that Sunday morning. I think he had came soon after it happened. He pulled in the driveway, seen us all standing out there, wondering what's going on, and we told him what happened. And at that time, a police vehicle came down the road, so we stopped them and told them what happened. And we had a description of the vehicle. We had the color of the vehicle, what brand it was. We had a license plate number. We had a pretty good description of what it was. And so the police actually started chasing after them. And they actually caught up to him down the road several miles later. And as they came up on the kidnapper's vehicle, the kidnapper started shooting at him. So the police actually backed off because they weren't going to risk their lives trying to get someone. And so all this was taking place. And like I said, Zach would have been 11 years old when this took place. So here he is with a group of men that he don't know, going someplace he don't know where, not knowing if he would ever come back again. And what I find so amazing about, as I think about it, you know, this took place on a Sunday morning. And so we called back to our home church, tried to call back to my parents, my wife's parents, but they were in church already. So we simply called our home church, had a phone, found a phone number, called them, and told them, here's what happened. And as they prayed for us, and as the word started getting out, and other churches started praying for you, churches were in session when all this was happening, so they went together and started praying, and just seeing the power of God work. You know, there again, at this point, we didn't know what the results would be, but we knew that God's people were praying, and that we could trust God no matter what the outcome was. And so the kidnappers started calling Gito. He was another Haitian man, and started trying to do the whole ransom process. Of, hey, we have someone. You know, what's it worth? You know, so Gita wasn't at church Sunday morning, so he was trying to figure out what was happening. Why are they calling him? And, well, that time he found out what happened. He realized he's the middleman to do this whole ransom negotiation process somehow or another. And so they took Zach. They took Zach uptown, close to Patientville. I'm not exactly sure what the name of the town was for sure, and put him in a safe house. Basically, the idea was put him somewhere. They're going to guard him until they got the negotiation process figured out. Hopefully, get some money out of the deal, and then possibly let him go. There happened to be another person in the same house where Zach was that was also kidnapped, and that person was a Haitian person, and they were also trying to do the whole negotiation process of trying to get some money out of it. So about 4 hours went past until, you know, at this time we had no idea where Zach was, what happened, what's going on, would we ever see him? You know, how do you have a church service when this just happened? Well, church just kind of, we didn't have church. So about 4 hours later, we started getting reports that they possibly have found him. And of course, you know how things go, the grapevine works pretty well. And you start hearing this person, but no one could verify this. And, you know, started hearing some different things. And finally, we got verified that, yes, they do have him. And that we were supposed to go to the police station uptown and pick him up. And so we did that. And so basically what happened is, the police backed off following the kidnapper's vehicle. But they kept asking, did you see this vehicle at this intersection? Which way did they go? And there's enough of people out that they said, either turn here, went straight. And they actually kept basically following their tracks until they got to where the safe house was. And at that point, the police would have stormed the safe house and would have freed the two people that were there. At that point, I don't think anyone was, the kidnappers were already gone. They dropped them off and they left. They knew the police weren't going to be real far behind them. So they left. Police stormed him, got him free. We ended up going back to the police station, you know, picking up Zach. Well, of course, they wanted to know what our story was. You know, they wanted to start an investigation. So they started, had to tell the whole story of what we knew, vehicle, who was in it, all these things. You know, back and forth, they were handwriting this whole chronicle while we were trying to tell it. So that was Sunday afternoon, and you praise God, we got Zach back. He was unharmed. You know, I still remember as we got him back, you know, we asked, well, how are you, Zach? He said, I'm good. But he said, I'm missing my one sandal. He said, it's still back in the house. We said, don't worry about the sandal. That can be replaced. You know, we're thankful we have you. Praise God that we have you. You know, I believe at that point, I don't think Zach really fully understood what could have happened, or what most times would have happened. I mean, he knew he was a place he didn't really want to be, but he didn't necessarily fully comprehend what generally happens in them scenarios. And we praise God for that. Through that whole time, and it was a time of trusting God. Of God, what do you want from us now? You know, why did he make us go through this? And of course, at that point, we were under a lot of pressure to come home. You know, we could have got a plane ticket fairly quick to come home. Part of the complications were our one son had a passport that was expired. So we couldn't necessarily fly him. So we actually went to the embassy and talked to him. Okay, what are the options here? And they would have given us an emergency passport to leave. It's a one-time passport for one trip, and that's it. And we opted not to do it just because of, yeah, we decided not to do it. Ended up staying in Haiti through that time. But it's just amazing through that whole time, seeing God's hand work. You know, God was faithful. We didn't know the outcome, but the power of God through that time, and just feeling the presence of God, the power of our prayers, the people praying through that whole time. And through that time, getting different emails from people that said they were praying for us, and people we never met, still haven't met. The power of God working in our lives. So, of course, part of that whole investigation process was the National Police of Haiti opened an investigation in the kidnapping unit. And so we met with several different police officers, different people, and we were downtown one day, had to meet with them again, and they advised us to never drive the same vehicle or to come the same road or to pull in the police station the same way. And I'm like, I just feel comfortable doing this. I mean, they're like, well, it's more than likely, at that point they didn't catch any of the kidnappers, and they said, more than likely you're being watched. So make sure it's different time of day, all this, and it doesn't give you a real easy feeling when you gotta get to the police station thinking, who's watching? And so we met a police officer there, and there again, you know, who do you trust? You know, is this an inside job from someone? How do you know that? And we had met a police officer. He was actually from the New York Police Department, and he was working with the Haitian Police Department in the kidnapping unit. And he took on the case, and it allowed us to feel a little easier knowing, hopefully, it's someone we can trust. You know, as we worked through that whole thing. And the last I know, they had actually apprehended. So there's four men that were involved, and they were wanted for other kidnappings. And so two of the men had actually went to the local bank soon after it happened, and their names were on the list of wanted people in Haiti. And so they went to the bank and wanted to draw money out, and their accounts didn't have enough money in it. So the teller said, come back a couple hours later, and we'll take care of this. Well, what they did is they actually called the police in the meantime. And so these men actually came back to the bank thinking they're going to get the money and had the bank surrounded by police. And they realized what happened and ran. And the police actually shot both of them men. Both of them men lost their life that day. They did catch two other men as well that were in prison at the... And I'm not sure, I don't know where they are at this point, but yeah, they were in prison and we had left Haiti yet. We had to go downtown and verify they were the men and they were going to go to trial. And I'm not sure what all that looks like. But it's just a time of, you know, it's tough. How do you forgive men that did this to you? We didn't do anything to them, but yet they were willing to do this to us. It's a time of us searching God and trusting God. Soon after this, another time, I was at the bank, and so I was at our admission administrator at the time, and we were rebuilding, so we were going through quite a bit of cash, through a lot of money in a given week, and when I went to the bank, I knew the tellers well, and they had a little room, probably a 8x8 room behind closed glass, that if you went there, you could knock on the door, they opened, you went in, and no one could see who was in there. Well, I went there that day and went in this room. It's fairly full, which wasn't unusual because that's where all the large transactions took place. So everyone's doing their thing. I'm waiting in line, and guy stepped up to the counter and he went to draw out, I think it was $300 US. And the teller said, well, you know, this room isn't for them little transactions. You can't come in here. You got to go out to the main line and do your business. And she said, besides, you don't even have $300 in your account to draw out, so we can't give you the money. I didn't think nothing of it. I'm standing there in line, kind of minding my business, and tore him up a little bit. He couldn't get his money, but he left. And as soon as he left, there were about three other Haitians in that room, and they said, that man was in here for one reason, and he's spying on someone. And my heart sank. When I looked around that room, I was the only white person in there. And as they were talking about possibly who he's watching, why he was in this room, seeing who's here, and I'm like, it's pretty hard to hide when you're the white person there. And I remember, I did my business, got our cash, and I remember walking out to the truck that day, and I could hardly drive home. I was shaking so bad I could hardly push a clutch in on the truck to get it in gear. Not knowing, am I being watched? They knew what for truck it was. It's pretty evident. trusting God. How much do I trust God? And I don't say this to lift myself up. I'm just saying this is real life. You know, as you think about trusting in God, do I trust God? Am I willing to trust God through all these times? And here again, God having his protecting hand over us as we went home and nothing happened. Praise God for that. As I think about our time in Haiti, you know, we as a family never regret living in Haiti. All through all these times, we still sit around the supper table reminiscing. This different person, that different person, what we did. And different times, every now and then our two oldest boys knew Creole fairly well, and they start jibber-jabbering at the table, you know, saying different phrases in Creole and this and that. And it's interesting, and the impact it made on their lives. You know, some people say, well, you shouldn't take your children on the mission field. I don't believe that this morning, this afternoon. I think we should. Our children can thrive. Our children can do well as we think about it. But looking back over our time of God's faithfulness and God's goodness to us as we live there, as we develop friendships, still have friendships, as we trusted God and God's protecting hand over us, it was a blessing to our lives. Is think about that surrender to him. You know, this morning, if you want to experience the peace of God, I encourage you to surrender to him. Whatever God's calling you to do, just surrender to him. You may not know where God's going to lead you. You may not know what the outcome is always going to be. But are you willing to say, God, I trust you. God, I want to go where you want me to go. God, I want you to do what you want me to do. And be willing and faithful in that. 2021, we had the privilege of going to Haiti as a family. We had moved back in 2012, and I went back about every year since then. So I was going back and forth once or twice. Some of the boys might go with us. My wife didn't have the opportunity. So finally, 2021, we planned a trip to go back as a whole family and just go back and visit our friends, spend some time there. And that was a blessing to us. You know, as we went back, and in a sense, I felt it really brought closure to our lives. You know, meeting these friends, to our boys, you know, they wanted to go back, but they weren't sure how or when's the time. We went as a family, and there again, just meeting people as they went out and met their friends again, talked to their friends. It was a blessing to us. We often get asked the question, why did he come home? Or when's the right time to come home? You know, so when we went to Haiti, we made a 2-year commitment. And we had made the 2-year commitment with the intent of allowing God to lead us and God to tell us when the time is for us to return back if he wants us to do that. Didn't necessarily limit ourselves to them 2 years. And as time does, it kept moving on. You know, 1 year went into the next year, and 1 year went into the next year, and we were happy, our children were content, we were serving God, we felt God's presence despite all the things that we had gone through. We wanted to be where God wanted us to be as a family. And, you know, every now and then the topic would come up, well, you know, especially we come back home on furlough, when are you going to come home? When God tells us the time to come home, we'll come home. And then, you know, people start saying, well, maybe you need to start thinking about it. Well, if God wants us to, he'll tell us when it's time. And so we talked about it a couple of times, and we were content. We knew that's where God wanted us. But I remember one time, the last time we were home on furlough, we were home for, I think it was 6 weeks. And started talking about it, and started sensing that maybe it was God's time. Maybe God was telling us it might be time. You know, they say coming home is harder than going on the mission field, and it is. It was much harder for us to say we are coming home than it was for us to say we are going. And as we thought about that, well, how do you know when it's time? You know, our 2 years was gone. We were working on, at that point, 5 years. Knew the language fairly well. Our children had friends. And so we had decided, me and my wife had decided, we're going to committed to a time of prayer. We said we're going to pray for it for a month. We're going to come back after a month and we're going to talk about it. And it's kind of amazing after, you know, we were both praying about it. We said we're not going to talk about it at all in this month's time. We're each going to pray about it. After the end of the month, we're going to talk about it. And we did that. And it was kind of amazing. We came to the end of that month and we both had the same conclusion, that God was calling us to come, and we both felt at peace about feeling our time was up in Haiti. And just having that peace was something that, knowing that we felt, was God's reassurance to us that he wanted us to return back to the States. We did end up staying, I think it was another 14 months after that, till we finally got back. And yeah, like I said, we still have friends there. It was harder for us to leave than it was to go. Leaving our friends behind, people that we knew, people that impacted our lives. A place that, you know, you can't live somewhere 6 years without making an impact on your life. And it had. And just knowing that God wanted us home and to be back here. And as we came home, I think the transition for us coming back here was probably a lot harder than we ever envisioned it would be. You know, you come back and friends move on in life, church moves on in life, all them different things. It probably took us a good 2 to 3 years before we finally felt that we were home again. You know, our children would say, can we just go back to Haiti? That's what we know. That's where our friends are. And to work through that whole process of that can be difficult. But there again, just looking back to God's faithfulness throughout the years and looking to him, knowing that God had faithfully called us there, we felt his hand. And God had faithfully kept us them years as we served there, as we worked with the people of Haiti, as we developed friendships, and God faithfully calling us home to where he wanted us to be, was a blessing. And I'd stayed involved with SLM until about a month ago. I was served on the board for quite a few years, got back and forth to Haiti, and about a month ago I actually got off that board. So at this point my involvement in Haiti is very, very minimal. But I look back at them years of growing and years of learning. And you might be thinking, well, so what are you doing? Well, part of my reason for getting off of Haiti is, I alluded to that this morning, I believe, of giving oversight to a church in Ghana, Africa. So my mission work isn't done. It feels like I'm trying to maybe trading off one for another. So Mid-Atlantic has a church that we are working on planting or working on growing in Ghana, Africa. So I've been asked to give oversight to that church. So I end up going to Ghana a couple months ago, and I'm going to be traveling to Ghana probably once a year for the next several years as I help with that church plant. So the work of God goes on. You know, whether it's in Haiti, whether it's in Ghana, whether it's in, you know, whatever, wherever it is, the work of God goes on. And it's, you know, as I think about my role in church leadership, and I alluded to that this morning a little bit as well, of God calling me to different roles in leadership. You know, sometimes it's hard for me to understand why, you know, God, I'd rather be the one doing the work. I'd rather be the one getting on the plane, going somewhere, serving. But realizing, I believe God's calling us to a different role of life and making, getting people excited about serving. Whether it's young people or old people, whoever, are we excited about serving where God called us to? Am I encouraging them to go? Am I willing to be part of the sending church, praying for them, supporting them? If I can't go, can I bless others as they go? And I think that's probably where a lot of us find ourselves. Can we bless others as they go? Do I get excited about mission work? So I just want to ask you the question this morning, this afternoon. Where's God calling you again? And we think about God calling us to different roles of life as life changes, as life goes on. Where's God calling you? And I just want to encourage you this afternoon, follow where God calls you to go. If God is calling you to go somewhere, I encourage you, go where God wants you to go. There's peace there. There's joy there. Maybe you don't always understand. Maybe sometimes it don't make sense. But if God is calling you, you better be packing your bags and going if you want the peace of God in your hearts. For some, it's going to be staying home, being faithful here. For some, it's going to a foreign land. Some, it's for local missions. For many of us, it's in the occupation that we do. So this afternoon, are you willing to go where God calls you to go? Are you willing to trust God no matter what the outcome is, no matter what the circumstance is? Or can you trust God? God is faithful. We have seen it in our lives. And I trust that you have seen it in your life as well. And as you go and serve God, that you do it with enthusiasm, knowing that God is with you. And so wherever God leads you, I just want to encourage you as a church, go. Put your hand in God's hand. You know, as young people, if you'd have told me when I was 16 years old that I'm going to be where I'm at this afternoon, I would have said, you're probably wrong. So young people, I don't encourage you. You don't know where God's going to lead you. But it starts right now, being faithful to God, serving God. And as God leads you, as different doors open, being willing to step through that door no matter what. Maybe you can't see the bigger picture of things. Are you willing to step through the door? Allow God to lead you. And as God does that, you can experience His peace and you can experience His joy. Thank you for coming this afternoon. Like I said, I didn't want to share this to lift ourselves up, but I want you to be able to see God, the graciousness of God, the goodness of God, the faithfulness of God. That's the God that we serve this afternoon. The same God that Israel served, we serve now. And God is still faithful if we follow Him. Why don't we all stand for a closing word of prayer?